I hear a noise. I turn toward the green. The noise is louder, approaching fast. We start to stand, the noise is louder. Footsteps on leaf and dirt and broken branch, we're tangled and having trouble standing. It's louder and we're up. It's louder and I look at Lily. Louder and she takes my hand. It's just outside the clearing. She kisses me. It's coming through. She looks me in the eye. It's through. She says, "You're all I've got." The noise stops. I turn around. Lincoln is standing a few feet away from us. He speaks. "Ken took over for me. I thought I'd come see how you're doing." "I'm doing fine." "No, you're not. You're not even close." "Depends on how you think of it." "I think of it according to the rules of this institution. You obviously don't." "No, I don't." "Let's go, and not a word while we're walking back." I turn to Lily, who is staring at Lincoln. Her stare is a mixture of defiance and fear and rage. Lincoln stares back at her, and he tries to step between us. We are still holding hands, and she pushes him away. He grabs her wrist, and she holds my hand tighter, and she stares at him, and she speaks. "I'll keep my mouth shut, but I'm not letting go." "You're in no position to be making demands." "It's not a demand. It's the way it's gonna be." "You broke the rules. Now you deal with it." "Fuck you and your rules. I am dealing with it." She stares at him and he stares back. I watch her and I am proud of her. She breaks my heart. I love her. They stare at each other. Her eyes are stronger than she knows. Lincoln can see what I can see. She is not letting go of my hand. He can talk all day, try to pull us apart for as long as he wants. She is not letting go of my hand. "Follow me." He turns and starts pushing through the green, and we follow him. We hold hands and we stare straight ahead. Lincoln is moving quickly. He gets to the trail and he stops and he waits for us. When we're a few feet behind him, he starts walking again. The trail leads us back to the green grass separating the buildings from the wood. As we get closer, we turn and we stare at each other. There are no words. We just stare at each other, and with each second, Lily's eyes soften. They start to tear. I don't want her to cry. I don't want her to go. I don't want her to be in trouble. I'll take the blame if necessary. They can kick me out, and I'll wait for her, and I'll be fine. She's crying. Not sobbing, just tears down her cheeks. More tears. I wish I could take them and make them mine. I don't want her to cry. Not now, not ever, not ever again. She's crying. We reach the door. Lincoln opens it and we step inside. All of the men turn and stare. Lincoln closes the door and he steps in front of us and he speaks. "I'm taking her to her unit. Go to your room and wait there. It may be a while." I nod. "Let's go." I look at Lily and she looks at me. I pull my hand away and I put my arms around her. I whisper in her ear, "I love you. Remember that. I love you." She holds me until Lincoln puts his hand on her shoulder. She steps away and he waits for her and she turns and they start walking up the stairs and I follow them. Everyone is staring at us. Ken and the men, staring. We enter the hall. I hate it, fucking hate it. They walk in front of me and I watch them. I stop walking when I reach my door. I just stand and I watch them. Lily is a few feet in front of Lincoln. As she walks, she stares straight ahead. He stares at her back. There are no words. The hall is silent. As they near the end of the hall, Lily turns around and she looks back at me. All I see are her eyes, deep water blue and defiant, broken and lost, her eyes staring back at me. They are wet with tears. I don't want to lose them. They turn the corner and they're gone. I stand at my door hoping she'll come back, hoping this is all a nightmare, hoping for the sake of hoping. I stare down the hall at the unforgiving white walls. Nothing changes. I open my door and I step inside my room. It is quiet and empty, exactly as it was when I left it this morning. I look at my bed and I think about sitting on it. I look at the bathroom and I think about a shower. I look at the window and the gray light coming through it and I think of climbing out of it. I look at the walls. I would like to destroy them. I can only wait. For my fate to be decided, for Lincoln to come back, I can only wait. The substance of what has happened sinks into me. Not gradually, but all at once. I have broken one of the cardinal rules of this institution. I have broken it with impunity. I have fallen in love with a girl, a beautiful and profoundly troubled girl who is alone in the world and who has said she cannot live without me. I don't want to stay here without her, and if I leave, I have nowhere to go. She has nowhere to go. We could go back to her grandmother, but her grandmother will be dead soon. We can't go to my family. I have burdened them too much. We could run, but there's nowhere to run. I am wanted, and sooner or later I'll get caught. When I am, I'll be sent away, and it will be for far longer than 3 years. We are both addicts. We both need to be here. We're going to get kicked out. Both of us. Kicked out. I think back on what has happened. I try to see what I did wrong. I try to rethink what I have done and find a way that would have allowed me to avoid this situation. I could have ignored her the first day. I could have thrown away the note she gave me. I could have not spoken to her or not responded to her. I could have not called her back earlier or not left the unit or not stayed in the clearing when I met her. I didn't do any of these things. If I had, I would not be in trouble, not be facing what I am. I don't want to accept what has happened. I want to go back. I want to change it. Fuck me. We're fucked. I sit on my bed, light a cigarette, take a drag, a deep drag, as deep as I can take. I stare at the floor. My thoughts slow. I know I can't change what has happened, and I don't regret it. I did what I did, and I would do it again. I love her. And love is more important than rules or regulations. I have learned more from it than I have from them. I have become better because of it. Fuck the rules and regulations. I take another drag. My thoughts slow more. Two streams run simultaneous to each other. Drink. Lily. Drugs. Lily. Get fucked up, Lily. They are independent of each other, and they are intertwined. One is an overwhelming need for self-destruction, an overwhelming need to kill what I feel with chemicals. The other is of Lily and where she is and what she's doing and what she's thinking. Is she okay? Who is with her, and what are they saying to her? They overlap and run together because I need her, and her absence and the pain I know she's feeling fuels the need to kill what I feel. I stand up. I sit down. I stand up. I sit down. My mind is telling my hands to go, to take action, to facilitate leaving here. My mind is telling my hands it is time to leave. I sit on them. I sit on my hands. I feel like a complete asshole, a weak, pathetic fuck. My mind is telling my hands to leave, to get something, anything, to leave, to get destroyed. I am sitting on them. I am sitting on my hands. I am a weak, pathetic, addicted fuck. My heart is telling me to stay, to wait, to hold on, to have strength, to sit on my goddamn hands and defy them. Strength comes in defiance. Defy your mind, your feelings, your addictions. Defy them, you motherfucker, defy them. I sit on my bed, sit on my hands, close my eyes, breathe, let myself feel everything. I test my will. Can I sit and stay? Can I hold on? Am I strong enough? What the fuck am I doing? When will this end? End soon, please. Hold the fuck on. End soon. I sit and time stops, disappears, moves fast and slow, each second more and less than a second. My hands shake beneath me. My eyes are closed and I am breathing slowly. Thoughts and feelings of panic and self-destruction and endurance and self-will run through and through and through. Sit. Stay. Leave. No. Drink. Smoke. Panic. Panic. Leave. Stay. Fucked. Fucked. Run. 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 Caught. 8 years. Maximum security. Lily. Where are you? Lily. Where are you? Use. Drugs. Drink. Alcohol. Kill. Yourself. Now. No. Without time. On my hands. Fighting myself. The thoughts change. Use. Fucking. Drugs. Drink. Now. You. Motherfucker. We. Are. Stronger. Than. You. Will. Ever. Be. Over and over. Over and over, time has disappeared. I sit on my hands. I fight myself. Over and over, I fight myself. Over and over. I start to cry. Not sobs, just tears streaming down my face through my closed eyes. Tears from effort and tears from stress and tears from fear. This is a fucking nightmare. Worse than a nightmare. Tears from holding on and tears from fighting and tears brought on by the prospect of death and by the prospect of a return to my old life. There are tears of love. Lily's love and the love of friends and family love. There are tears because the fury and the fear and the addiction want to beat me and I will not let them. They want to beat me and I will not let them. Time is gone. I cry. It's a fucking nightmare. Worse. Please end. Please end. Please end. I hear the door. I open my eyes. It is dark now. The gray is gone. The simple sound breaks the cycle. The simple sound of a door. Miles turns on the light, sees me sitting there, looks surprised. Are you all right, James? No. Is there anything I can do for you? No. Have you been here since this afternoon? Yeah. Why are you sitting on your hands? I don't trust them. I know that feeling. Yeah. I don't sit on them, though. I squeeze them together. I smile and I move my hands and I wipe my face and I set my hands on my lap. They are crossed with lines and they are blue from lack of blood. I shake them and they hurt. They tingle. They sting. Are you going to dinner? I'm supposed to stay here. For how long? I don't know. Would you like me to get you something to eat? Sure. What would you like? Whatever's easy. Okay. Thank you. Anything I can help you with? You know what time it is? He looks at his watch. 6:15. Thank you. I walk to my bed. He stands and he walks to the door. If you're not here when I get back, I'll leave whatever I bring you on your nightstand. Thanks, Miles. He walks out, closes the door behind him. I lie down on my bed. I am cold. I start to shake. I climb under the covers. I curl into myself and I close my eyes and I bury my face into my chest and into the bed. I fall into a sleep where I am not asleep, a state of heavy consciousness, neither aware nor unaware. My body relaxes, my body shuts down, my body rests. My mind slows, holds images, wishes, mistakes, reality. They are like thick, surreal photographs. I look at them in my mind and they sit there. I am sleeping, but not. I'm not asleep. I am aware and unaware. The door opens again. I open my eyes. I lift my head and I see Lincoln standing under the doorframe. There is light behind him. He speaks. Time to get up. Okay. Come to my office when you're ready. Okay. He turns and he leaves and he closes the door as he goes. I get out of bed and I walk to the bathroom and I turn on the water and I splash some of the water over my face. It runs down my cheeks and over my lips and into my mouth and it tastes good. I lean over and I take a sip. Another, 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 straight from the faucet. It's good. I leave my room and walk through the silent hall. The unit is empty, the men at dinner. I go to the coffee machine and I get a cup and I take a sip and it immediately wakes me. As I walk down the stairs, I start to get nervous. The coffee burns my stomach and I can feel my blood moving through my veins. My legs are unsteady and I think about each step. In front of the other. In front of the other. I cross the lower level, walk into the short hall leading to Lincoln's office. The hall is dark, though there is light at the end where his door is open. I think about each step. As I enter his office, I have to think about each step. He is sitting behind his desk. Shut the door. I turn and I shut the door. I turn back and he motions to a chair across from him. I sit and he leans back in his chair and he stares at me. I stare back. If it were up to me, you'd be gone. I don't like your attitude and I don't think you've made much of an effort and I think your continued resistance to what we try to do here, which is help people, has been detrimental to both the unit and to yourself. He stares. I stare back. That being said, you're being given another chance. If you behave and work hard and follow the rules, you will be able to stay until your program runs its course. If you violate any of the rules, even something as simple as not doing your morning job or saying anything more than hello to any woman not on our staff, you will be asked to leave. You think you can do that? I smile. I'm relieved. Yes, I can. Thank you. Don't thank me. I wanted you out. Thank Joanne. Just like before, she's the one who saved you. Thanks anyway. You can go now. He looks down at some papers on his desk. I wait. When he looks up, I speak. Is Lily staying? No, she's not. My relief disappears. You kicked her out? Panic returns. When we told her she wouldn't be allowed to see you anymore, she walked out. You didn't stop her? When people want to leave, we let them leave. Our job is to help people who want to stay and be helped. What if I told you I knew where she was going? Doesn't matter. I know where she's going. I could get her and bring her back. He chuckles. And instantly the panic is gone. The fury rises. Why's that funny? We discourage relationships because they generally turn out this way. People think they can solve each other's problems, and it's just not the case. I hope this will teach you a lesson. What's that supposed to mean? We know what we're doing here. We have rules for a reason. Maybe you'll listen a bit better from now on. Fuck you. What did you say? She's a person, not a fucking lesson. What did you just say to me?
I said, fuck you, you fucking asshole. She's not a fucking lesson.
One more remark like that and you're out of here.
You think I want to stay here now?
If you want to stay sober, you will. I'm not going to stay in a place where assholes like you say that their job is to help people, but when someone needs help most, you deny it to them because they believe in something different than you or need a different kind of help than what you think is right.
Do what you need to do.
I will.
And I'm going to stay clean doing it, if for no other reason than to be able to come back here and show your self-righteous ass that your way isn't the only way.
Good luck.
Fuck you!
I stand and I leave. I walk through the unit and I go to my room. I grab the little book that Dao put on my warmest clothes, a sweater, two pairs of socks, another pair of socks over my hands. It's cold, I can see it through the window. I leave my room. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. I walk through the halls. I will never have to see these fucking halls again. Fuck you, goodbye. I walk through the reception area, hit the front door. I am out of the clinic. Fuck you and goodbye. I am out. I start walking. It's cold and dark. There's no light and no moon. I follow the road, the one road in, the one road out. I see the outlines of trees and the mist of my breath. I hear rocks and gravel crush beneath my feet. I don't remember coming in, it was so long ago, but I know this road ends on a larger road. There will be cars on the larger road. I will try to get a ride. Locals will know where I'm from and they won't pick me up, but trucks might pick me up, or people passing through on their way somewhere else might pick me up. My face is healed. I don't look like the image of an alcoholic and a drug addict and a criminal anymore. I look normal, though I'm not. A truck might pick me up, or someone passing through might pick me up. The locals won't get near me. They will know what I am. The road curves away, and the last light of the clinic disappears behind me. It is pitch black, and it is quiet, and I like it. I have been away from the night and from the darkest darkness for too long. I know them well. I am home now, and the feelings of home and the fury of home come back to me. They all come back. There is noise behind and noise ahead. The noise behind is a car or truck coming down the road, coming toward me. The noise ahead is the noise of vehicles moving fast on a long, smooth road. I want the noise ahead. That is noise I need. I am through with all that behind me. Fuck you and goodbye. I start running. I am out of shape and the cold air burns my lungs. I run along the edge of the asphalt and the trees. I run as fast as I can, knowing the distance I need to cover. It is not far. Not far, but far from me. Each deep breath of the cold black air hurts my lungs. I'm 23. I can hardly run. I make it to the larger road. The lights of passing vehicles streak across long, wide fields. I know the nearest city is to the west. Lily is in the city, and the west is to the left. I sprint across the road, and I turn left, and I start walking. I watch for a vehicle, and I wait to lift my thumb. A white van pulls up at the end of the road leading to the clinic and flashes its lights. Whoever is in the van can go fuck themselves. It pulls out, and it makes a left, and it drives toward me. As it approaches, the window on the passenger's side slides down. The van pulls alongside me, and I feel someone staring at me. They wait for me to acknowledge them. I don't. I walk with my eyes fixed and focused. The city is somewhere in front of me. Above the murmur of the engine, I hear a voice.
Hey, kid. You forgot something.
It is a voice I know. A voice I like. A voice I trust. A voice that held me when I couldn't stand. I look at the van and I look through the lowered window. Lincoln is sitting in the passenger seat. He is staring at me. Hank is sitting in the driver's seat. Hank is holding his coat. The coat he lent me, the coat I left in my room. He is smiling at me.
You're gonna freeze your ass off without this.
I smile.
How you doing, old-timer?
Good. How you doing?
I'm in a hurry.
Where are you going?
To find a friend.
Jump in and get warm for a minute.
I don't mind the cold.
Jump in.
No thanks.
Lincoln speaks. Get in.
I stop walking and Hank stops the van. I stare at Lincoln and he stares at me.
I'm not going back.
Get in the van.
Fuck you.
You want to find her?
Yeah.
Then get in the goddamn van.
The glow of the city rises. We pull off the highway and down an exit ramp into a crowded center of towering steel and glass. Next to a boarded building and rundown motel is the bus station. It is a typical inner-city bus station. There are drug dealers, pimps, homeless men and women sleeping on benches, drifters, runaways. I am at ease among them. I make inquiries. I describe Lily. Someone thinks he's seen her. He thinks she's down the block. I tell Hank and Lincoln to stay in the van, and I run. The building is a wreck. A wretched fucking wreck. There is trash everywhere. There are soiled mattresses lying in the halls and in rooms. Polluted pipes are dripping some foul liquid. I hear rats in the walls, and I see their shit piles in the corners. A smell that resembles rotten eggs and death permeates the air and makes me wince, cringe, want to hold my breath. I move quickly, driven by the stench and the shit, through a hall and up the first set of stairs that I find. It is pitch black in the stairwell, so I walk carefully. I step on a can, and it collapses beneath my foot. I hear rats scurry away. I hear them chatter and squeak. I put my hand on a rail, but the rail is covered with something thick and wet and cold, so I move it. At the top of the first flight, there is an empty garbage can that has been lit on fire. I can see outlines of soot and shades of ash. I step around it. I keep going up. It gets cleaner as I go higher, though it is still disgusting. At the top of the second flight, I start to hear sounds of human activity. Footsteps, muffled voices, deep inhalations, deep exhalations. The hiss of a butane torch. There is laughter, but it is not happy laughter. It is a high, scratchy cackle, like the laugh of a witch. It echoes, echoes, echoes. I get to the third floor. I step into a hall that leads to my left and to my right. To my left, a strong male voice screams, "Who the fuck's there, motherfucker? Who the fuck's there?" I start walking toward it. It screams again, "You'd best tell me who the fuck's there." I don't say a word. I walk, tense up, prepare to fight. It screams, "I'll fuck you up, bitch, fuck you up." I walk closer. Prepare. It becomes quiet, but for the butane hiss. I know the voice came from a room two doors down. My fists are clenched, my jaw tight, my muscles twitching. I step around a corner and into the room. Against the far wall is a gaunt old man who looks like a ghost. His hair is matted, his skin is a gray of unknown race, a color that comes from months without cleaning. He is smiling without teeth, and he is clutching a pipe, a long, thin glass pipe, red hot and flaming. I see the pipe burning his hand. The butane torch is in his other hand. He is pointing it at me like a gun. The smell of crack, like bittersweet peppermint gasoline, drifts through the room. The smell taunts me, and it enrages me. I would love to taste that smell, but I want Lily more than the great and terrible rock. As I stare at the man, he speaks.
"I ain't got no rock. I ain't got none."
I step back.
"I ain't got none. I ain't got none. Don't take my rock. Don't take it."
I step through the door.
"There ain't nothing here, motherfucker. There ain't nothing for you, you dirty white devil, you dirty white pig."
Away and back. About halfway to the stairwell, just as his voice fades, the man starts screaming, "Who the fuck's there, motherfucker? Who the fuck's there?" I ignore him. "Who the fuck's there, motherfucker? Who the fuck's there?" I move down the other hall. Beneath the screams, I hear a new noise. Another hiss, the cackling laughter, creaking floorboards, inhalation and exhalation. I push open another door. I see three women and a man sitting on the floor in the middle of a room. Their eyes are all wide and empty. One of the women is inhaling from a pipe. She sucks so hard her cheeks are caving in. She finishes and she passes the pipe to the woman next to her, who takes it and holds the torch to its tip and inhales. I don't say a word to them. They don't say a word to me. I want that pipe. I would die for that pipe. Hold on. Get away. As I reach for the door, I hear the cackle. I shut the door and keep moving down the hall. It is quiet. The man has stopped screaming. The only noise is of my feet stepping on old boards, faded newspapers, and shards of glass. I look into each room, but they are all empty. I fight the urge to go back for some rock. The urge is growing stronger each second. As I near the end of the hall, I hear a man's voice saying, "Oh, baby, yeah, baby, suck it, baby. Suck that big fat dick." Under the voice, I hear spit on flesh moving back and forth, back and forth. The fury flares to full strength, and I remind myself that I am here to retrieve, not to hurt. I am here to retrieve and get out. My urges are growing. Retrieve and get out as fast as I fucking can. I get to the end of the hall, and I stand in front of a door. Behind it I hear, "Oh yeah, you little whore, just like that, take it all, you little whore." I open the door and I step into the room and she's there on her knees, her face buried in an old man's crotch. There is a pipe and torch on the floor next to her. He looks over, says, "What the fuck?" She looks up and gasps. In her eyes is the greedy need, the desperate insanity, the awful shame and the complete obsession of crack. She falls back away from the man whose khakis are at his ankles. He yells, "What the fuck are you doing in here?" I ignore him and I step toward her. I am here for her. He reaches for a bottle. I see it out of the corner of my eye and I stop and I turn around and I take one step toward him. He's within striking distance and he has a bottle in his hand. I strike. A quick, hard backhand across one of his cheeks. It stuns him and I take another step forward. He shrinks against the wall and I stare at him. "I'm not here to hurt you." He stares back at me. His eyes are wide. He's scared. "Get your shit and get the fuck out of here." He starts pulling up his pants, looking around the floor for whatever he has with him. I turn back to Lily, who was clutching the bag of crack and the pipe and crawling backward into a corner. I reach toward her with one hand. "Come here, Lily." She crawls backward, shakes her head. "Come on. We're going home." She crawls into the corner, clutching her gear. She shakes her head. "We're going to leave that shit here, and we're going home." She clutches, shakes her head. Her eyes are gone. She's gone. She speaks. "No." I step toward her. "Yes." Behind me, I hear the old man walking out. She shakes her head. "Get away from me. I'm not leaving without you." She screams. "Get the fuck away from me!" I step forward. "No." She huddles deeper into the corner, clutches the bag and the pipe. "Get the fuck away from me!" I step forward, lean over, put my arms around her. She struggles, tries to push me away, tries to fight. I hold on tight, stand straight, pull her up with me. "Come on!" She's grunting, growling, struggling, fighting. I know it's the drug, the crack, the rock that's fighting me. I know it's not her. I know if I hold on long enough, I'll beat it. "Come on, we're going home." She tries to push. "You can fight me all you want, but we're going home." She tries harder, harder, harder. I raise my voice. "Stop fucking fighting me! We're going home!" There is a last burst of anger and fear and punching and pushing and she stops, goes limp. I feel the pipe and the bag against my chest. I feel them fall away, hear them hit the floor. I think about picking them up. The urge is so fucking strong. I hold on to her. I hold on until it goes away. Hold on. She starts crying against my shoulder, weeping. She has broken. The drug has broken. I stay still for a moment to make sure. I hold her and I turn her and I start walking toward the door. We get into the hall, start moving toward the stairwell. The ghost is screaming again and the cackling has returned. I hold Lily and she cries and we start down the stairs walking slowly and carefully. If I let her go, she will fall. She is broken and lost and high. She doesn't know what's happening. If I let her go, she will fall. We get to the bottom of the stairs, walk through the basement, the smell. We walk up the stairs back into the night. We walk around the building. The van is out front. Hank steps out and he comes around to meet us.
She all right?
No. He opens the door.
We'll get her back fast.
I lift her inside. Thank you. He shuts the door. I sit down with Lily in my arms and she cries against my shoulder. Lincoln turns around and he looks at us.
Crack?
Yeah. He nods and without another word he turns back around. Hank opens the driver's door and he gets behind the wheel and he starts the van and we pull away from the building. Hank drives as fast as he can within reason. Lily starts to come down from the crack. She shakes and sweats, fades in and out of consciousness, fades in and out of sanity. When she's conscious, her eyes are wide and nervous. They can't stay in one place, and she blinks, and her whole face moves as she blinks. She babbles about her bag of crack and a large fire and a man from Atlantis who is coming to get her. When she is not babbling, she is crying. When she's unconscious, she twitches and moans as if small bursts of electricity are blasting through her body. Her legs shake and extend, her arms quiver. She holds onto my shirt so tightly that she tears it. Occasionally she swears like someone with Tourette's, saying fuck you or motherfucker or goddamn fucking bitch. I sit and I hold her. I respond to her words, though I know she can't hear me. Even if she's awake, nothing registers, except that she was high and now she's not. She's coming down. I hold her. I just want to get her back. We pull off the highway and onto the road that leads back to the clinic. There is a spark of recognition. Lily knows where we are. She grabs onto me and I can feel her fingernails breaking through the flesh of my arms and she looks into my eyes and her eyes are filled with fear. And for the first time since we have been in the van, she says something that makes sense.
I'm scared.
There's nothing to be scared of.
I'm scared, James. Everything's gonna be okay. I didn't mean to do it.
I know you didn't.
I just couldn't stop myself.
It's over.
I'm so scared.
We're home now. Everything's gonna be okay. We pull in front of the entrance to the clinic. The van stops. Hank and Lincoln get out. Lincoln opens the back door, and I help Lily from the seat and hold her as we step out. Lincoln speaks. We'll take her from here.
Where's she going?
Detox.
How long?
Probably a day.
Take good care of her.
We will.
He reaches toward us.
Lily holds tighter. I tell her it's okay, it's time to go. I tell her I love her. She starts crying. I gently push her toward Lincoln, who holds her up on one side as Hank walks to the other. When she is gone from me and safe in their arms, I look at Lincoln.
Thank you.
He nods.
Go to bed. Sleep in tomorrow if you want. Come to my office when you wake up.
Okay. Hank speaks.
And don't worry about her. She's gonna be fine.
I start to break down.
Thank you both so much. Thank you.
Lincoln nods. Hank says no problem. They turn and start walking Lily, who is incoherent and babbling again, toward the medical wing of the clinic. I watch them and the tears flow and I fight the sobs. I know she's in good hands and I know she's going to be fine, but seeing her this way breaks my fucking heart, destroys me. Makes me want to die so that somehow she can live. I watch them walk away and I cry. They disappear into the medical unit. I stand alone in front of the entrance with my face in my hands, and I cry. It is cold and dark, and it's the middle of night, and there is nothing I can do but cry. I let myself. For her, and for her pain, and for the world that we have created together. I would give my life if it could somehow make her better. I would have given it earlier tonight. I would give it in the future. If it would make any difference, I would give her my life. I know it won't make a difference. I cry. I stop crying, and I turn, and I walk inside. There is a woman at the front desk. We say hi to each other, and I head back to the unit. The halls are empty and silent. Everyone is asleep, and when I get to my room, I open the door, and I quietly step inside. Miles is in bed, and the lights are out. I get undressed, and I climb under the covers of my bed. I start crying again, softly crying. I think of Lily, and I cry. It's all I can do. Cry. The next day, I tell Lincoln how grateful I am for what he did. After the lecture, I see Ken standing outside the door with Randall, the lawyer who has been working on my case. I look at Randall, speak. Any news? Can you talk in Ken's office? I say yes, and we walk to Ken's office. With each step, my feet get heavier, and a sense of dread begins to consume me. I watch Ken and Randall in the hope that some manner of expression in one or both of them will give me a clue to my fate, but there's nothing. It feels as if I'm walking to my cell right now. Ken opens the door, and Ken sits down behind his desk, and Randall and I sit across from him. Randall is holding a file on his lap, and he opens it, and he looks at me, and he smiles. I am expecting the worst, so his smile annoys me. He speaks. I almost don't want to know, but I'll always wonder if I don't ask. Who are your friends? What? Who did this for you? I have no idea what you're talking about. He laughs. We got an offer this morning for 3 to 6 months in county jail and 3 years probation. All of the felonies have been changed to misdemeanors, and if you get through probation cleanly, they'll be wiped from your record. I smile. No fucking way. He nods. Yes? Yes, fucking way. I laugh. What happened? The prosecutor said they had encountered some problems, that there were some issues with missing evidence, and that he had received a couple of phone calls on your behalf. When I pressed him for details, he wouldn't give them to me. I laugh again. I am overjoyed. When do I go? You want to accept? Fuck yeah! I'll get the paperwork started. When will I have to go? I believe you'll have to turn yourself in within the next 10 days. I smile. Fuck yeah! Ken speaks. I can't believe you're this excited about going to jail. I'm excited because 3 to 6 months in county is a fucking cakewalk. Randall speaks. Do you have any idea how this happened? I smile. I have an idea. You mind sharing it with me? I don't think the people I'm thinking of would appreciate it if I did. I understand. He closes his file, stands. I'll bring the paperwork by when I get it. I stand. Thank you very much for all of your help. I think there are some other people you may need to thank more than me. I will, but I'm thanking you as well. Certainly. We shake hands and Randall leaves and I sit back down. Ken looks at a file for a moment, then at me. I went over your program with Joanne this morning, and we think you're ready for the final 2 steps that we cover here, which are step 4 and step 5. It doesn't matter that I haven't done the other ones. Will you ever do them? No. Then let's talk about 4 and 5. Okay. Step 4. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step 5. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. My confession. Yes. Except for the God part, it sounds fine. We recommend that when you do your inventory, you write everything down. And we recommend that when you do your admission, you do it with a priest. When will this happen? Depends on how long it takes you to do your inventory. I'll be done by tomorrow. It usually takes people 3 or 4 days. I know what I need to say. Don't make a joke out of this, James. I won't. I promise. Are you comfortable doing step 5 day after tomorrow? That sounds good. I'll schedule a room for you. If you have any questions, come find me. Okay. I stand and I thank him and I leave. I walk back to the unit where Lincoln is leading a group on relapse prevention and the recognition of triggers. He is standing in front of a blackboard speaking. I look for a place to sit. When the session ends, I stand and I walk over to Leonard and Miles, who are sitting together against one of the walls. As I approach them, they look up at me. I smile and I speak. Thank you both very much. They look at each other. They look confused. They look back at me and Leonard speaks. For what? I was just with the lawyer who's been dealing with my shit. Miles speaks. And? I smile again. 3 to 6 months in county jail. I have to report within 10 days. Leonard smiles. Miles speaks. Are you happy with that? I nod. Yeah, I'm very happy. Miles nods. Good. I think you two had something to do with it, so I want to say thank you. Leonard looks at Miles. Miles looks at Leonard. Leonard speaks. Did you do something? Miles shakes his head. No. Did you? Leonard shakes his head. No, I didn't do anything. Miles smiles. And if you had, considering our positions on the opposite ends of the legal spectrum, you certainly wouldn't have discussed it with me. Leonard smiles. No fucking way. I get nervous discussing the weather with you. Miles laughs. I speak. Is that how we're playing this? They both look at me. They are both smiling. Miles speaks. Consider yourself a very fortunate young man, James. Leonard nods. Very fucking fortunate. I smile. Thank you. Miles stands and says he needs to make some phone calls. Leonard stands and says he has some business to take care of before tonight. I walk up the stairs and I go to my room and I open the door and I sit down on my bed and I pick up my book. I have missed it, my little Chinese book. 44. What is more important, fame or integrity? What is more valuable, money or happiness? What is more dangerous, success or failure? If you look to others for fulfillment, you will never be fulfilled. If your happiness depends on money, you will never be happy. Be content with what you have and take joy in the way things are. When you realize you have all you need, the world belongs to you. 36. If you want to shrink something, you must first expand it. If you want to get rid of something, you must first allow it to flourish. If you want to take something, you must allow it to be given. The soft will overcome the hard. The slow will beat the fast. Don't tell people the way. Just show them the results. 74. If you understand that all things change, constantly change, there is nothing you will hold on to. All things change. If you aren't afraid of dying, there is nothing you can't do. Trying to control the future is like trying to take the place of the master carpenter. When you handle the master carpenter's tools,
chances are that you'll cut your hand. 33. Knowing other people is intelligence. Knowing yourself is wisdom. Mastering other people is strength. Mastering yourself is power. If you realize that what you have is enough, you are rich, truly rich. Stay in the center and embrace peace, simplicity, patience, and compassion. Embrace the possibility of death, and you will endure. Embrace the possibility of life, and you will endure. When we walk out of the lecture hall the next day, Joanne is waiting for me near the door. She asks me to come to her office. She sits on the couch and I sit on the chair. We both light cigarettes. She speaks.
Heard you were in a crack house the other night.
I was in a place where a bunch of people smoke crack, but it wasn't a crack house.
What's the difference?
Crack houses usually have a supply on hand, and they're usually run by someone and kept secure by them. This was just a deserted old building where people go smoke.
What was it like?
It smelled bad.
That's what you remember?
No. She nods and she waits for me to offer more. When I don't, she speaks.
Were you near it?
Yeah.
How close?
Touched it and could have done it.
Did you want to?
Very badly.
Why didn't you?
I made a decision not to.
Simple as that?
Simple as that.
You make it sound easy.
It wasn't.
You think you'll be able to do it in the long term?
It'll be harder than it was the other night, but I do.
Why will it be harder?
I love Lily more than I love getting fucked up. That made the decision whether to help her or take care of myself an easy decision to make. When I'm alone with it, be it the rock or the bottle, it will be more about me and whether I want to take care of myself or not.
Which do you think it will be?
You know what I think. She smiles. I saw Lily this morning.
Where?
I went down to the medical unit to check on her.
How is she?
All things considered, she's good.
I think she's more worried and embarrassed than anything else.
What's she worried about?
Her grandmother, and finding the money to stay here.
Is there any kind of aid she can get?
There is, though it usually takes a while to work it out. We're trying to rush it through.
Will she get to stay?
I hope so.
What if she doesn't?
I don't know.
I look away. I stare out the window behind Joanne's desk. It is bright and sunny outside, like a morning in spring. A morning full of life, a morning full of new beginnings. I could still run. Run from jail and run from my past. Run with Lily, run until we're safe, and run until we find ourselves a life. Running is still an option, but I don't want to run. I have run my entire life. I am tired of running. I stare out the window, but the window is without answers. It will come in time. It is a morning full of new beginnings.
What are you thinking about?
Answers.
You have any?
No.
You will.
Answers always come.
When do you want to do your personal inventory with a priest?
As soon as possible.
First thing in the morning?
Yeah.
I'll schedule a room and a priest. I'll make sure the priest will be able to deal with whatever you have to say. Come by my office after breakfast and I'll walk you over.
Thank you.
After you're through, your program is basically finished.
What's that mean?
It means it will be time for you to leave.
When?
The day after tomorrow.
I smile.
Excellent.
Do you have any plans?
Maybe see my brother for a couple of days. Then I'll go down to Ohio and do my time.
I hear you're happy with the outcome of that situation. Yeah, I am. Very happy. Any worries?
No, I just want to be done with it.
What are you going to do about Lily?
Hopefully she'll be here. Since I won't, I'm assuming I'll be able to speak with her and we'll figure something out. If she doesn't stay here, we'll figure something else out.
Like what?
I don't know. I'm hoping she stays here.
She nods, waits for more.
When I don't give more, she speaks.
Come find me if you have any questions while you're doing your inventory.
I will.
I stand and I leave.
On my way out, I look at her clock. It is almost 11. I make my way back to the unit and I knock on Leonard's door. He says, "Who is it?" And I say, "James." He says, "Come in," and I open the door and I step inside. There is a small black leather suitcase sitting on the floor next to the door. An open garment bag is spread across his bed. He is carefully filling the garment bag with precisely folded shirts. He speaks.
"How you doing, kid?"
I sit on the edge of the bed.
"Good. How are you?"
"I'm happy to be leaving."
"What are you going to do with yourself?"
"Got one of my boys picking me up and we're going to drive back to Vegas. Probably stop and see Mount Rushmore and Old Faithful and a few of the sights along the way."
I chuckle.
"Sounds cool.
You got any plans yet?"
"Looks like I'm getting out day after tomorrow. I'm going to try and get hold of my brother and spend a few days with him. After that, I go down to Ohio."
"You worried about Ohio?"
"No.
I probably don't need to tell you this, but if anybody fucks with you, go after them and go fucking hard. Just showing them you're willing to fight will keep them away."
"I'm hoping to avoid that shit, but I'll do whatever I have to do."
He smiles.
"You're a good kid."
I laugh.
"Thanks, Leonard."
He finishes packing the garment bag and he closes it. He reaches into his back pocket and he pulls out his wallet and he removes a small card like a business card. He sits on the bed across from me and he hands me the card.
"Those are all my numbers and the places where you can get hold of me."
I take it.
"If you ever need anything, doesn't matter where you are or what you need, you find me and I'll take care of you."
I look at the card. Look up at Leonard.
"There are 5 different last names on here, Leonard."
He smiles.
"I use different names in different places. The numbers correspond to the names. The Vegas number is the best, but they can find me at any of them."
I put the card in my pocket.
"Thank you, Leonard."
He nods.
"I also heard Lily was having some financial issues. I don't want you to worry about them anymore. She's going to stay here and she's going to be fine."
I smile.
"What?"
He smiles.
"Love is a beautiful thing, kid."
"You shouldn't have done that, Leonard. You
say thank you, kid."
I smile.
"Thank you, Leonard. Thank you so much."
He nods again.
"One last thing."
"What?"
"Before I say this, I want to say that I mean no disrespect to you or your family or your father, so if you feel or you think he'll be uncomfortable with what I'm going to tell you, let me know."
"Okay." He takes a deep breath, holds it for a moment, exhales. He looks as nervous as I've ever seen him.
"I have always wanted to be married. I have always wanted to have children. More specifically, I have always wanted to have a son. I have been thinking about this for a while now, basically since the first day I met you, and I have decided that from now on, I would like you to be my son. I will watch out for you as I would if you were my real son, and I will offer you advice and help guide you through your life. When you are with me, and I plan on seeing you after we both leave here, you will be introduced as my son, and you will be treated as such. In return, I ask that you keep me involved in what you are doing and allow me to take part in it. Outside of here, I see our relationship functioning to a certain extent, just like it did in here.
We are friends. We trust each other. We help each other make it through shitty times. We enjoy the good times together. If there are ever issues with your real father, I will insist you defer to and respect him before me and over me.
Is this a joke, Leonard?
He shakes his head.
No, not even close.
You want me to be your son?
He nods.
Yes.
You sure about that, Leonard?
I'm kind of fucked up.
I know what your problems are, kid, believe me. But if I had a son, I would want him to be like you.
I smile.
Sounds cool to me.
You sure about that, kid?
Yeah.
I'm kind of fucked up.
I laugh.
Doesn't bother me.
He laughs.
Good.
He stands.
Now pick up one of these goddamn bags and walk me out of here. This isn't gonna be all fun and fucking games.
I laugh and I stand and I pick up the suitcase. Leonard grabs his garment bag and he puts it over his shoulder and we walk out of the room. We walk through the halls. He asks me to say goodbye to everyone for him, tells me he didn't want to do it himself. He doesn't like goodbyes, and he has said too many of them in his life. He asks me to give Miles and Maddie and Ted the number on the card that corresponds to his real name, and I tell him I will, and he asks me not to show the card to anyone else. I tell him I will keep it safe, and I will keep it private. We walk through the lobby of the clinic and past the receptionist and through the front door. There is a large, white, brand-new Mercedes-Benz sitting at the curb. The driver's door opens, and a tall, thick man in a black silk suit steps out. The man has a long, deep scar along one of his cheeks, and he looks like a bear. A mean bear. A bear who would eat a person alive if given the chance. Leonard smiles.
Snapper?
The man speaks.
Hey, boss.
They hug and they separate. Leonard speaks.
Thanks for coming.
Of course.
This the new car?
Yeah, you like it?
I do. It's white and it's new. Just what I wanted.
Good. Leonard turns to me, motions me forward.
James?
I step toward him.
This is the Snapper. He's one of my closest friends and an associate of mine. They don't call him the Snapper because he likes fish, so be careful. Snapper, this is my son, James.
We shake hands. The Snapper looks at Leonard.
This the one you told me about?
Leonard nods.
Yeah, and he's a whole lot meaner than he looks, so you be careful too.
The Snapper laughs, looks back at me.
Nice to meet you, kid.
Yeah, you too. Leonard opens the back door of the car and throws his garment bag onto the back seat. He motions for me to bring the suitcase, and I step forward and toss it onto the back seat. Leonard shuts the door, and he turns to the Snapper.
Let's get this show on the fucking road, Snap.
You got it, boss.
The Snapper walks around the car and sits down behind the wheel. Leonard turns back to me.
You need anything, you call me. Don't forget that.
I won't.
It's been great getting better with you.
I'll be in touch soon.
Thanks for everything, Leonard.
In a lot of ways, you've saved my life.
Thank you.
He smiles.
You saved your own life.
I smile. Leonard steps forward. He puts his arms around me and he hugs me. I put my arms around him and I hug him. He lets go and he steps away and he looks in my eyes and he speaks.
Be strong. Live honorably and with dignity. When you don't think you can, hold on. I'm proud of you. And you should be proud of yourself.
I look back. In his eyes.
I'll miss you, Leonard.
We'll see each other soon, my son.
I nod. I force myself not to cry. Leonard turns and he opens the passenger door of the car and he sits down and he shuts the door and the car pulls away.
I stand and I watch it. As it drives down the road leading in and out of the clinic, the passenger's window goes down and a fist, a tight, closed fist, emerges from it. The fist is held high in the air. As I watch the fist and Leonard and all that they represent to me drive away, I almost start to cry. Leonard and his fist. I almost start to cry. I stand there looking down the road after the car is gone. I stand there for 5 minutes looking down the road. It is hard to imagine that Leonard is gone. Strange and kind and vicious and magnificent Leonard. Satan and saint. I am going to miss him. I am going to miss him. I turn and I walk back into the clinic. I make my way to the dining hall. I get in line and I get a tray and a plate of tuna noodle casserole. The meals are starting to repeat themselves. I have had tuna noodle casserole before. I hope I don't ever have it again. I sit down alone at an empty table. I start eating. I can't tell which part is tuna and which part is noodle and which part is casserole. I eat anyway. One bite after another. I fill my stomach. I miss Lily and I miss Leonard. I am alone at an empty table. I fill my stomach. One bite after another. I finish my plate. I start to stand. I want another plate. I want 40 or 50 plates. I want a fucking vat of this tuna noodle bullshit. I see Miles walking toward me. He is smiling. I sit back down. I still want more. More, more, more. Hello, James. Miles sits down across from me. Hi. He puts a napkin on his lap, picks up a fork. How are you today? I'm okay. You? I have some good news. What? My wife called me this morning. What'd she say? She said she decided to give me a second chance. She is going to come here and enroll in the family program, and we are going to try and work things out between us. There are no guarantees, but we're going to try. I smile. That's great. I don't know if congratulations is the right word, but congratulations. He smiles. Thank you, James. Thank you. We don't speak anymore. We just sit. He eats and I stare across the dining hall. It's comfortable, relaxing, pleasant. To sit and not talk. To sit and stare at nothing. To sit and let the mind shut down. To just sit. There is no awkwardness and no anxiety. Miles is in his world and I am in mine. We just sit. Miles finishes eating and he stands and he waits for me to notice him standing. When I do, I stand and we put our trays away. We walk through the halls and Miles goes to the lecture and I don't. He asks why I'm not going and I tell him if I am leaving in 2 days, I don't want or need to sit through any more lectures, that I have been lectured enough. He laughs and I walk back to the unit and I go to the telephone booth. I call my mother and father. They are on the other side of the world, and it is the early morning there. My father answers the phone. He sounds as if he's asleep. I ask him if I should call him back, and he says, no, hold on for a second. I wait. My mother picks up the phone and says hello, and she also sounds as if she's asleep. My father picks up another phone. There is an echo and a delay. I tell them I am leaving in 2 days. They are both surprised. My father asks me if I am ready to leave, and I tell him I feel ready, but that I won't know how ready until after I'm gone. My mother asks what that means, and I tell her I won't know how much better I am, if I am better at all, until I am in the outside world. My dad asks what that means, and I tell him that it's easy to stay sober in here because there is nothing to tempt me. He asks me if I am ready to deal with temptation, and I tell him that I believe I am, but that I won't know until I leave. He sighs as if he is frustrated. My mother sighs as if she is frustrated.
I ask them how they are, and they say they are fine. I ask them how Tokyo is, and my mother says they wish they were closer to me so that they could offer me more support. I tell her that they have done more than enough. My father tells me he's worried about me, and I tell him he shouldn't be, that I have never felt better or stronger in my life. He says that is reassuring. He doesn't sound as if he thinks it's reassuring. They ask me what my plans are, and I tell them I'm going to call Bob and try to spend a couple of days with him, and then I am going to go to Ohio and start serving my time. They ask me how I'm going to get there, and I tell them I'm probably going to take a bus. They offer to get me a plane ticket, and I say thank you, but no. My mother asks me if I need anything, and I tell her no. My father asks me to call them when I am with Bob, and I tell them I will. He tells me to be careful. I tell him I will. My mother tells me to be careful. I tell her I will. They tell me they love me, and I tell them I love them, and we hang up. I call my brother. He is not home, so I speak into his answering machine. I tell him that I'm being released the day after tomorrow, and that I would like it if he could come pick me up. I tell him that if he can't, not to worry about it, that I'll find my way. I ask him, whether he picks me up or not, if I can stay with him for a couple of days, if I can sleep on his couch or on his floor or wherever there is space. I ask him to call me back. I leave him the number. I hang up. I step out of the phone booth and I walk to the shelves where I found the crayons for my coloring book. Next to the crayons, there is a small stack of yellow legal pads. Next to the pads is a coffee mug full of pens. I take a pad and a pen, and I walk to the upper level, and I get a tall cup of coffee steaming hot and black. I put the pen in my pocket, and I carry the pad in one hand and the coffee in the other, and I walk back down the stairs. I open the sliding glass door with my foot, and I step outside. The sun is shining, bright and high, though not warm. A slow breeze moves the air like a whisper. I walk across stiff grass, frozen now and for the term of winter. I walk toward the lake. It is hard and still, and it is covered in a shell of ice. I sit down on one of the benches, the middle bench, and I take a sip of the coffee and I light a cigarette. I look at the pad, and the pad is yellow and empty. I start thinking back across the length of my life. I start thinking about all that I have done and all that I have done that was wrong. I start young, or as young as I can remember. I was bad even then, as young as I can remember. I start writing. Ran over a nursery school teacher with a big wheel. I did it on purpose. I was 4. Hit a boy with a book bag full of books and broke his nose. His name was Fred. I was 6. Dug a hole and tricked a boy named Michael into climbing into the hole. I put a board over the hole and I sat on it for 3 hours. He cried and cried and cried. I laughed. I was 7. Put a boy named David in a coat box at my parents' church. Put a padlock on the box and flushed the key down the toilet. Got permanently banned from Sunday school. I was 7. Stole a pack of menthol cigarettes from my friend Clay's mother. Smoked them and threw up. Stole another pack. Threw up. Stole another pack. I was 8. As I am writing the wrongs of my early childhood, most of them make me laugh. They were stupid, the actions of a kid who didn't know any better, or who didn't give a fuck if he did know better. I write 4 pages of them. Things I did. They make me laugh. I start writing again from the age of 10, the age when I started to lose control. Thinking back, it seems like maybe I didn't do the things I did, that someone else did them, and I just watched. I wish it were so. I started to lose control at 10. Snuck out of the house and got drunk. Stole liquor from my parents more times than I can count or remember. Stole a stack of porn magazines from my neighbor's garage. Caused a traffic accident by egging a random car.
I watched the aftermath from the top of a tree. No one was hurt, though there was bent steel. Got caught mooning the principal of my school on a Friday night while I was supposed to be in my bed. Was dragged home by the principal while my parents were having a dinner party. I ruined the party and humiliated my parents. I stole a bag of pot from my friend Sean's father. I stole a pipe from Sean's father. I stole a bottle of pills from Sean's father. I smoked the pot in the pipe and took all of the pills. They made me vomit. I did it again the next time I was at Sean's house.